Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 418 for March 30th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
There's almost an expectation that, oh, this will be interesting. What are they going to do with Cutty? And for me, it's taken 3 years, but now watch us go in the next 2 or 3 years. There's going to be a lot of fun with Cutty. Trust me on that one.
Jason Craig is in charge of Cutty Sark for the Edrington Group, and he's marking two anniversaries within a week or so. The brand's 90th anniversary on March 23rd, and the third anniversary of Edrington's acquisition of Cutty Sark, April 1st. And there's something to celebrate. After 23 straight years of falling sales, Cutty reported a 3% gain in 2012. More with Jason Craig on the Cutty Sark comeback later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Lots of new releases to talk about this week. Erin will be releasing its oldest single malt yet during April. The 16-year-old Erin will be the first in a series of limited edition releases over the next couple of years, when the Erin 18 will be released in the spring of 2015. 9,000 bottles of the 16-year-old will be available worldwide. The Whiskey Exchange has released its second single cask bottling from Glendronach. It's a 17-year-old malt from a Pedro Ximenez sherry puncheon, bottled at 56.6% ABV. Alistair Day will be sending his Tweed Ale blend to North America for the first time. Batch number 3 of the blend his great-grandfather originally created will be sold by the LCBO in Ontario starting in May. Master of Malt has a rare single cask bottling from Balblair. The name is a giveaway. The 1990 Balblair Isla cask was matured in a cask previously used at an undisclosed Isla distillery. No word on how many bottles will be available. Now, we do know which distillery that Isla cask did not come from. After all, Kilhoman wasn't even being dreamed of back in 1990. However, Isla's youngest distillery is coming out with a new series of annual releases. Loch Gorm is named for a loch near the distillery, and the first release of Loch Gorm was matured for 5 years in Oloroso sherry butts, with an extra 6 weeks of finishing time in Oloroso hogsheads. 10,000 bottles will be available worldwide this year. Now, this next one isn't an official distillery release, but it's about as close as you can get. I want to take you back to September of 2011, when I was at Brook Laddie for the celebration marking the 10th anniversary of the distillery's revival. That weekend, then-managing director Mark Rainier told me about his son Rory's special connection to Brook Laddie.
Half an hour after we bought he was born. No, he's very much the mascot of the distillery. He's the, you know, the living embodiment of the progress of what we've been doing. No, crumbs. You know, not when we opened the distillery, but when we actually bought it half an hour later. You can imagine, it was a pretty traumatic day. But he was here in my wife's arms as a six-month-old baby and filled the first barrel. So barrel number one. Of our whiskey is his. A lot of people try to buy it off him, but he's not selling.
Of course, Mark Rainier left Brook Laddie last fall after the distillery was sold to Remy Cointreau, and Wee Rory's cask has been bottled. Mark Rainier has placed 250 bottles on sale exclusively through Loch Fyne Whiskies at a price of £250 each. The remaining bottles will stay in the Rainier family. After all, Rory still has a few years to go before he's old enough to taste one of them. On the bourbon front, 2013 marks the 40th anniversary of one of the greatest feats in sports, Secretariat's historic Triple Crown, and a Kentucky Derby record that still stands today. Four Roses will be releasing a commemorative bourbon to mark the anniversary. The bottle will feature Secretariat's blue and white racing colors, and the horse's owner selected the whiskey that will go inside. Penny Shenery is now 91 years old and worked with Jim Rutledge of Four Roses to pick from several different recipes. 3,500 bottles will be available starting April 27th, with 500 special decanters to go on sale May 1st at the Kentucky Derby Museum in Louisville. Speaking of milestones, Heaven Hill celebrated one this past week, the filling of barrel number 6,500,000. Parker and Craig Beam hammered in the bung on that barrel Tuesday with members of the Shapira family and local leaders from Bardstown. The barrel will be on display with previous milestone casks in Rickhouse Y at the Heaven Hill campus in Bardstown, right across from the Bourbon Heritage Center. The display is a part of the tours at Heaven Hill. Earlier this month, Dave Pickerel and a team of volunteers fired up the stills at George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon in Virginia. It's the fourth time they've reproduced Washington's original rye whiskey recipe, and since Washington didn't age his whiskey back in the day, this batch isn't being aged either. In fact, it'll go on sale starting this Thursday at Mount Vernon as distillery tours resume for the spring and summer. Around 1,100 bottles will be available for $95 each. The proceeds will support Mount Vernon's educational programs. In other news, last week I reported on the Scotch Whiskey Association's objections to Dewar's Highlander Honey, a new flavored version of Dewar's. The SWA objects to the labeling and marketing for Highlander Honey, since it gives consumers the impression that the product is a Scotch whiskey with honey flavoring. Highlander Honey is labeled as a spirit drink, but only on the back label. This week I received a response to the SWA's objections from Dewar's. In a statement, the company said it works closely with the SWA on the launch of any new Dewar's product, and that Highlander Honey adheres to all local market regulations in the U.S. Highlander Honey is expected to make its debut in the U.S. this Wednesday night at Whiskey Live New York. Diageo's bid to take a majority stake in Vijay Mallya's United Spirits cleared the final Indian hurdle this week when India's central bank signed off on the $2.1 billion deal. The approval means Diageo can close on its deal to buy 27% of United Spirits and offer other shareholders around $29 a share for their United Spirits stock, which closed this week at around $38 a share on the Bombay Stock Exchange. The Times of India reports minority shareholders are not happy with Diageo's offering price, but the world's largest liquor company is not likely to raise its bid. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at the WhiskeyCast website, but for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Introducing Glenmorangie Cask Masters Projects. Keep an eye on our Glenmorangie USA Facebook page for more details of this exciting project.
The latest episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is now online. We took three whiskey novices and had them taste three very different whiskeys: Mellow Corn from Kentucky, the Hibiki 12-year-old blend from Japan, and Highland Park's 12-year-old. You can listen to their tasting session at the WhiskeyCast website or on iTunes. Time now for Your Voice, brought to you this week by Highland Park. Had a lot of comments on both the WhiskeyCast website and our Facebook page about last week's episode and my visit to Amrit Distillery in India. Seth Grando asked what steps Amrit's taken to cut down on its heavy Angel's share. Well, you'll see this in the upcoming WhiskeyCast HD episode from Amrit, but they do have at least one warehouse located below ground level underneath the bottling hall. It's a bit cooler down there, and that does help a little bit, but there isn't really much they can do about the Angel's share because of the high temperature, humidity, and altitude, which combine to create an evaporation rate of about 11 to 12% each year. Also, last time I mentioned Hemanth Rao's request for help in finding good whiskey shops in the Seattle area to send his relatives to before they visit him in Bangalore later this year. We had some good suggestions, including at least one local craft distiller. Thanks for your help. And thanks to everyone who tipped me off to a series of photos by Ernie Button. Several years ago, he noticed some unusual patterns in the dried film of whiskey left behind on some of his whiskey glasses and started shooting close-up photos of the patterns. They really are very cool images. You'll find links to his portfolio on the WhiskeyCast website and our Facebook page. If there's something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, well, you can always post a note on the Your Voice section of the WhiskeyCast website or on our Facebook page. You can also email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And this week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name's Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Just a few days to go before Whiskey Live New York this Wednesday night at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan. Tickets are still available, including a few for the expanded 90-minute-long VIP tasting session. More than 280 whiskeys are now on the pouring list for the evening, along with a cocktail lounge staffed by the folks at the Flatiron Room. I mentioned the Dewar's Highlander Honey that will make its debut that night. There are reports we might see something new from Wild Turkey that evening as well. We'll also be recording the next episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings that night. Look for me. You might just wind up on the panel. There's a new bourbon-based buffet menu, a special Ardbeg Masterclass, and a few surprises, too. Now you can get a 15% discount on tickets when you use the discount code WhiskeyCast, all lowercase, at the Whiskey Live website. That's WhiskeyLive.com. Whiskey Live New York coming up Wednesday night, April 3rd at Chelsea Piers in New York City. This message is brought to you by Whiskey Live New York. Let's check the calendar of events, brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. April's going to be a busy month all over the world of whiskey. In addition to Whiskey Live New York on Wednesday, the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming, has its first Friday single malt tasting this week. The Whiskies of the World Expo is coming up Saturday in San Francisco, along with the Brighton Whiskey Fest in Brighton, England. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Australian chapter has a series of tastings around New Zealand the week of April 8th. The Society's U.S. chapter will hold single malt extravaganzas in New York City on the 11th, Dallas on the 18th, and Houston on the 25th. The Whiskey Guild has its annual tasting cruise in Washington, D.C. on the 10th. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold a tasting of sherry cask scotches on April 12th. Appalachian Wine and Spirits will have a Whistle Pig Rye tasting that same night in New York. Whiskey Live Tokyo is April 20th and 21st. Binnie's will hold its annual World of Whiskies tasting April 25th in Chicago. Whiskey Fest Chicago is the next night on the 26th. And finally, Tales of the Cocktail Buenos Aires will take place in Argentina from April 28th through the 30th. We have more than 220 whiskey events around the world on the calendar at the WhiskeyCast website, and you can search for events near you or in cities where you'll be traveling. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Tim Brennan, retired engineering supervisor, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've worked with Irish distillers for 40 years. I was born in Middleton and went to school in Middleton and then joined a company in 1971. Traditions in the old distillery were if you were involved in a very dirty job, you then got a half glass of Redbreast. They were the perks in the old distillery. We had one guy there who was particularly fond of his glass of Redbreast. And in order to go to the manager of the warehouse, he would get a really dirty bag of dust and he'd shake it over himself so that he looked so dirty. And he would head off over to the manager and say, "Mr. Daly, here I am. I've had a terrible dirty job for the morning. Look at the cut of me. Any chance of getting a half one?" And he'd duly get his half one, come back, change his clothes, and he was fine again.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Cutty Sark has two anniversaries of note this week. The brand marked its 90th anniversary on March 23rd. And 3 years ago on April 1st, the Edrington Group acquired Cutty Sark from its original owner, Barry Brothers and Rudd. Cutty was one of those legendary brands that became a mainstay for Scotch drinkers in the years after Prohibition, but lost its way in recent years. In fact, sales fell for 23 years in a row until 2012, and Cutty Sark was relegated to the bottom shelf at many retailers when they bothered to carry it at all. When Edrington acquired Cutty, they put Jason Craig in charge of turning the ship around. You may remember Jason from his days at Highland Park, and before that, the Macallan. But this assignment was a real challenge.
Well, the interesting thing with Cutty is when we bought it 3 years ago on April Fool's Day, which was quite ironic back in the day, we weren't sure what we had. We knew there was greatness within. We knew there was stuff to build on. But it's taken us 3 years to nail down what the brand is, what the brand is not. And there's fantastic things to play with Cutty. We've trimmed down the old age range. We've narrowed it down to a tighter age range. We've got a core product that is easy drinking, easy mixing, designed for access. You know, people are scared to say it's an access whiskey, something that people can drink, can mix, can freely socialise with, and not worry about a brand ambassador coming along saying that tastes of dried figs and freshly cut grass and you shouldn't be mixing that with water or Coke. That's not what Cutty's all about. Now, we as Edrington, with Macallan in the portfolio, with Highland Park in the portfolio, with Famous Grouse, it was almost a learning curve for us to accept a brand that wasn't super premium and at the top of its game, that was a little bit more mainstream, that was a bit more for access. So going forward, we're taking that message out to 22 different countries in the last 14 months have listed Cutty for the first time. So things are moving quite quickly.
But when they gave you the assignment 3 years ago to take this brand and make something with it, did you think that it would take 3 years to pull it off?
No, I didn't. I mean, there's an arrogance that comes with every marketing person. I spent 4 years working on Macallan. Fantastic times. I spent 5 years working on the overnight success that is Highland Park. Took 5 long years to get that one down. With Cutty, it had been in decline for 22 straight years. So to say I'll turn this around in a year or 18 months or 2 years would have been very arrogant. Internally, I thought I could, but it took just under 3 years, and now we're starting to see growth for the first time. The States, I mean, standing in America, a Highland Park launch, as you know, and for the first time in 24 years, America has grown Cutty Sark volume. Now, for me, that's a massive, massive moment. Now, it's only a little bit of growth, but after 22, 23, 24 years of decline, it's one of those lines in the sand where you go, and now we've turned the corner. The only way is up.
How much of that is the marketing? How much of it is what Kirstine has done with the juice?
Well, the juice itself hasn't changed that much. You know, we've been blending Cutty for Berry Brothers and Rudd since 1937 under Robertson and Baxter and all these little Venn diagrams that exist. So the juice hasn't changed. I think the issue that has changed on Cutty is the belief and the fact that the headline is it's under Edrington's control, which it always has been, but it's been under Edrington's control, liquid and marketing for a change. The company that brings you Macallan, the company that brings you Highland Park, the company that brings you Famous Grouse, there's a level of trust and a level of belief, and there's almost an expectation that, oh, this will be interesting. What are they going to do with Cutty? And for me, it's taken 3 years, but now watch us go. In the next 2 or 3 years, there's going to be a lot of fun with Cutty. Trust me on that one.
Such as?
Well, we've just kicked off a project based in the States, Prohibition Edition. We're talking about our 1920s era. We're talking about high strength, just over 100 proof. I think it's going to come in at 100 proof in the States. Easy drinking whiskey from that era. Now, I don't think the blended Scotch market has had enough fun. I came from Macallan, I came from Highland Park, where every single expression that is ever released is PR-able, is interesting. Consumers want to taste it. That never happens on blended Scotch. And my question is, why not? Now, I'm going to take my learning from Macallan, my learning from Highland Park, and apply it to Cutty and say, why not? And we've got to try and take the PR, take the messaging, and remember that it's harder to make a blend with 2 or 3 or 4 types of grain from 15 to 20 to 25 to 30 different malts and combine it in a blend than it is to say that's from a single malt distillery and it's called Macallan or it's called Highland Park or it's called Glenlivet. That is still hard to do, but a blend is much harder to do. And remember, 93% of all whiskies sold that are Scotch are blends. We just have to get our mojo back. We just have to get our confidence back, and we have to start telling the message about blended Scotch again, that it is okay to drink blended Scotch, because 93% of all Scotch is blended. So, but you've got to have a story. You've got to give a reason. And I think that's what the malt guys have done really well, but the blend guys need to take that back.
You talk about the 3% growth in the U.S. after many, many years of decline. The one area where Cutty was historically strong was in Southern Europe, Spain, Italy, throughout the Mediterranean regions, and we've seen the economic catastrophes in those areas. How did that hurt you, or did it affect you guys at all?
I can't say that it didn't. It was There are certain things out with my control. I love to think we can fix everything. I wish I had a magic wand for Southern Europe. Spain and Greece and Portugal have suffered, and have suffered for all brands. Talk to Diageo, talk to Pernod, talk to all the big guys. They've had the same problems. We're all down by about the same amount. However, the decline is beginning to slow. We've seen the stats, the decline is beginning to slow. Probably another year, 18 months, and it will bottom out. And hopefully it will then start coming back. But the onus on us, as the new owners of Cutty, was to say, it's not about Southern Europe. We have to get into other markets. And that's where the 22 different markets in the last 14 months have bubbled up. So 300 cases here, 500 cases there, 2,000 cases there, all going in a positive direction, start to offset the losses from Southern Europe. Now, that takes a long road, but for us, it's the right way to go ahead, and it's beginning to get the right results.
Let's talk about those other markets. Where are you focusing on?
Well, all the areas we were not. So we were never in Latin America. We were never in Africa. We've only just tokenism in Asia. We had 50,000 cases in Japan forever, but nowhere else. So we're looking there. Emerging Eastern Europe, into Russia, into Kazakhstan, into Czech Republic. All these markets were available through the Edrington model, where we've got Macallan and Highland Park and Grouse and Brugal rum. And all Cutty did was plug into the back of that and say, we have a portfolio. This is an easy drinking, easy access blend. Try us. Don't be ashamed to try an easy drinking, easy access blend and mix it with Coke, mix it with soda, put ice in it, drink it as you want it. You don't have to put it on a pedestal and worship it, which is what puts a lot of people off Scotch in the first place. We're trying to make this accessible and flexible and fun.
What's the next big thing you come out with for Cutty?
Ironically, having said all this flexible, interesting and fun stuff, we're actually going to look at a very old blend, and we're going to try and tell some of the backstory on Cutty. We've launched the Tam O'Shanter 25, which was about 14, 15 months ago, telling the Robert Burns story and where we got our name. We've talked to you about Prohibition, which we're launching in the States. We're looking at probably a 30-year-old kind of product, which talks about the Art Deco era. The 1920s, the 1930s, the cocktail revolution, when all the American bartenders left America because of Prohibition, went to Europe, learned all about cocktails, and then came back. We're looking to create something, probably in about a year's time, that celebrates that. Now, for me, that's not easy access, easy drinking whiskey, but we have to tell the backstory on the brand so consumers understand where we're come from. So for me, that's going to be fun, but the next big thing that comes out, Prohibition Edition, into the States and around the rest of the world. An easy drinking whiskey at 100 proof, you've got to try it.
By the way, you can hear my interview with Cutty's master blender, Kirstine Campbell, in episode 381 from August of 2012. It's available in the archives at the WhiskeyCast website. That's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in two separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex, dimensional flavor. Find out more at WoodfordReserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume, Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Now, there's a new limited edition Cutty Sark expression that Jason didn't tell us about. In fact, it was released this week to mark the 90th anniversary of Cutty Sark. We'll start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with that one. Kirstine Campbell worked with Joel Harrison and Neil Ridley of CaskStrength.net on a special version of Cutty for the Sea Whiskey in their Cask Strength and Carry On series. Just 500 bottles are available through Master of Malt. The three of them signed all of those bottles, and I received a sample just in time for this week's episode. It's bottled at 51.4% ABV. The nose is warm and spicy with ginger, grapefruit, and a hint of honey. The taste is peppery and warming with lemon cream, brown sugar, and a touch of smoky wet wood. The finish is smooth and slow to fade. The flavors remain consistent with a good balance, and adding some water accentuates the creaminess on the taste, and it adds some length to the finish, too. It's an excellent whiskey. I'm scoring the Cutty Sark Cask Strength and Carry On Limited Edition a 92. Let's move on now to a whiskey that I've heard about for several years, but never had the chance to try until I found it in a duty-free shop at Frankfurt Airport last week. Slier's single malt comes from Bavaria, and I brought home a bottle of the 2009 vintage, just 3 years old, and bottled at 43% ABV. The nose is malty with straw and grass notes, a touch of nuttiness, and a honey sweetness that comes out after a few minutes. The taste is peppery with notes of honey and a slight maltiness, a touch of caramel and honey sweetness too. Young but nice. The finish has a lingering pepperiness with a touch of lemon peel tartness too. I'm scoring the Slier's single malt from Germany an 86. And finally, it's been a while since I last tasted the Four Roses Small Batch Bourbon. It's bottled at 45% ABV. The nose is warm and inviting with maple syrup, oak, allspice, and a hint of vanilla. The taste is thick and oily with strong cinnamon and allspice notes, hints of vanilla and maple syrup underneath that last through the finish as those spices fade. It's hard to find a bad whiskey from Four Roses. I'm scoring the Four Roses Small Batch a 90. I've added these notes to the nearly 950 tasting notes that you'll find at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the pub with news updates, the calendar of events, and your voice, and of course a complete archive of past episodes too. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast, proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.